A morning of today's daf in Pesachim Kuf Tes Zayin, 116. We're on 115, and we are starting today from the bottom of Kuf Tes Vav Amud Aleph, bottom of 115 A, and we begin towards the bottom. When the 10th parak of Pesachim, which means that, and we are into already now the Seder, we are somewhere between the first and the second cup of wine. The Mishnah and Kuf Yudal Amud Aleph talked about the first cup of wine. First cup of wine really serves two purposes. Number one, it's the first of the four of the Dal Kosos. It's a mitzvah on Pesach to drink four cups of wine, as we talked about since the beginning of the Perek. In addition to that, there's also a mitzvah of Kiddush. Like every Shabbos and every Yom Tov, there's a mitzvah of Kiddush. So that first cup of wine represents really two things. It represents the first of the mitzvahs of Dal Kosos, and it represents a mitzvah of Kiddush as well. After having made Kiddush and having drunk the wine, so then the Mishnah then goes on to describe, now the Seder begins. Now normally after Kiddush, what do? Is we have a meal, and that's not what happens on the Seder night. What happens at that point in time is we have a vegetable, and we eat a vegetable. And we spoke at length regarding the actual vegetable, and the Mishnah and the Gemara had a discussion of what if you don't have any other vegetable other than just simply the marer. So what are we going to do? We're going to eat the marer twice. We're going to eat it at the beginning of the meal, and we're going to eat it at the end of the meal. And we had a discussion yesterday, an important discussion yesterday, in terms of when we actually make the bracha of al achilas marer. Do we make it in the beginning? Do we make it at the end? By the first, by the second. We had the discussion over there yesterday. We had Tosos over there yesterday, comparing this to the same thing as shofar, where we're going to be blowing twice on Rosh Hashanah. And when do we make a bracha? Do we make the bracha before the first shofar, the second shofar? That all went back to yesterday's discussion. Another discussion we had in the Gemara yesterday on Kuf Tes Vav Amud Aleph was a discussion of having tastes negate one another and whether or not matzah mar should be eaten together. Conclusion of the Gemara is, I don't know. I don't know if matzah mar should be eaten together. The Torah says, "Am matzah marim yochlu." I certainly know that I have to eat the Karban Pesach in conjunction with matzah mar. Do they actually have to be eaten together? So the Gemara concludes with an "I don't know," and the Gemara says, as a result of the fact that we don't know, so therefore what we do is we do both. We first eat the matzah by itself, then we eat the mar by itself, and then what we do is we take matzah mar, we put it together. And reminds us of the position of Hillel during the time of the Beis HaMikdash.
Hillel will put the Karban Pesach in with the matzah mar.
Sounds that way. It certainly sounds that way.
What?
You're right. You're right. Correct. Correct.
Yes.
Correct. Okay, we're on the very bottom of the Amud. We are starting with the words Amar Rabbi Elazar. It's the last two lines of the Amud. Amar Rabbi Elazar, Amar Rabbi Yoshia, Kol she tibula b'mashket tzarech n'tilas yadayim. You did something in water, you need to wash your hands. Meaning, now we're going to explain the practice of what we do nowadays, which is that before we dip the vegetable, so we wash our hands. It's what we call orchatz. Okay, if you want to sing the song, I'm going to, I'll take a pass on the singing right now. But that's orchatz. Good. So but before we do so, we wash our hands. Okay, why do we wash our hands? So just a little bit of Tuma Tahara that we need to know in order to appreciate and understand the Gemara over here. So what we're about to eat now is a vegetable. So a vegetable, in truth, does not need hand washing before eating a vegetable. Let's say our hands are tame. And they are. And there's a Tuma Derabanan that lies on one person's hands at all times. It's a rabbinically imposed Tuma. And it's a level of a sheni. So your hands are a sheni. So as you walk around over the course of any given day, so your hands are now a sheni l'tumah. So if I touch food with my sheni hands, nothing happens to the food. The food remains totally unaffected. Because food is chul and it's regular food. And we know that when it comes to food, food can only become a sheni. Well, the food can only become a sheni if it comes into contact with a rishon. But if it doesn't touch anything of a rishon or greater, meaning the food has to either touch a rishon or an av, and then and only then is the food going to become tummy. But if the food is, but if my hands are already a sheni, so it cannot impart tumma to your chulin food. Therefore, you don't need to wash your hands for chulin in general. Okay, there's an institution of washing hands for bread, but nothing to do, I mean, not nothing to do, but not our discussion for now. Good. So that's in general. So if I pick up the vegetable by itself and I wash my hands, there's no need for that. It's just simply unnecessary. The problem is as follows. We're going to dip it into a liquid. And because I'm going to dip it into a liquid, so now my hands are going to be coming into contact with a liquid. Liquids are more susceptible to tuma? And the answer is simply yes. Liquids are more susceptible to tuma. If any liquid comes into contact with a sheni, the liquid becomes a rishon. Now that's not the normal rules of tuma tahara. Normally what happens to tuma tahara is that anytime there's a transmission, so the level of tuma diminishes, meaning in that transmission it drops down a level. So what should have happened is that when I touch the liquid should become a shlishi. Truth of the matter is, what really should happen is when I touch the liquid should become nothing, because the liquid too is chulin. But the rabbis instituted that any time you come into contact with a liquid, the liquid jumps up to a rishon. This too is a rabbinic institution. So now, okay, but assuming all this to be so now when my hands touch a liquid, the liquid becomes a rishon. So now what I want to do is I want to remove the tumah from my hands, so that when my hands touch the vegetable, which is being dipped in a liquid, so now the liquid doesn't become the rishon, and the vegetable and then in part does not become a sheni. So what do I do? So I wash my hands before. Okay, I know I said that fast, I know I went over that very quickly, but that's the basis for our washing our hands. Do we make a bracha at this point in time, or do we not make a bracha? So you ask any kid who's gone through an elementary Jewish education, so of course they know you don't make a bracha. So they know that, but the Rishonim debate. The Rishonim have a discussion of whether a bracha at this point in time should be said or not. You can take a look at the Baam Tosfos, which goes to the top of the next Amud, where he has a discussion and a debate whether or not a bracha should be said over this Netilas Yadayim. In the meantime, however, we're just looking at the Gemara, back to the Gemara, Rabbi Yoshia, Kol Shetibulo Bamashka, anything that's dipped in a liquid, Sarach Netilas Yadayim, so you have to wash your hands in anticipation of that. Amar Papash Mamina, Haychasat Sarach Leshakui Becharoses. So what do you see from here? It's clear what you see from here, and that is, you got to dip the vegetable into the charoses. By the way, this certainly lends support. Could lend support to the Rambam. The Rambam, if you remember, I told you he dips his karpas into the charoses. But the Rashbam says over here, no, we're talking about the maror stage of the meal. We're not talking about the karpas stage of the meal. Anyway, but you have to dip it into the charoses. Now, why? Why do you have to dip it into the charoses? Meaning, well, first of all, let me just back up one step. The Gemara says it's clear that you have to dip. Why? Why is it clear? Because why am I washing my hands? I'm not washing my hands for the purpose of the vegetable. Again, when my hand touches the vegetable, there's not going to be any transmission of tumah. So it has nothing to do with the vegetable. The reason why I'm washing my hands is because it's being dipped into a liquid. And so that's the reason why I'm washing my hands. So now that you know that fact, so now the Gemara says it's elementary. It must be that I'm dipping the vegetable into the liquid, obviously. Otherwise, why is there a purpose of washing the hands? The Gemara expresses exactly this point, which is that if I'm not dipping it into the... I missed two words of the Gemara. Two important words. I'll come back to those two words in just a moment. But if you don't think that you're not dipping, so then why would you be washing your hands? Obviously, I'm dipping into the charoses. Now, I skipped two words of the Gemara, and they're two very important words. Sarach leshakui becharoses mishum kapa. The reason why I dip it into the charoses is because of kapa. Okay, good. What's kapa? Okay, simple question, not a simple answer. So if you take a look at the Rashbam offers two explanations as to what kapa is. Number one, says the Rashbam, kapa, says the Rashbam, is eres. It's a type of poison. I cannot explain this in our modern state, but just going through what the Rashbam says, that in the maror there are trace amounts of poison, and it needs to be antidoted. I know I didn't say that well, but so what do you do? So the Rashbam writes, "Eres shecharzeres yeshbo eres kederech habitzalim." He says like onions. So I know he says poison. Maybe poison's not the right word. Maybe it's sharpness. I'm not really sure. He says eres, so I assume he means poison. And so what I'm doing is when I dip into the charosis, somehow in ways that I cannot explain, the charosis counteracts the poison content of the chazeres. And so therefore you're good. Now you're good to go. That's one explanation of what kapa is. It's the poison contained there in the maror. Then the Rashbam offers a second explanation. Okay, Virach Pirush. He quotes Rabbeinu Chananel, five lines into the first Rashbam on the Amud. Kapa tolas. It's a worm. In other words, it's a worm that was infested into the maror. Right, when we have our lettuce on the Seder night, so obviously what we do is we check it, make sure that there are no bugs in the lettuce. So, in the good old days, in this regard, nothing much has changed. So, there were little worms indigenous to the lettuce growing inside the lettuce. The Italian betrumas atolaim should be ikari ilanas ve'asakapa should be yerek yavchushin should be chumash should be yam mutarim. Now, here's an interesting point, and that is that you're allowed to eat the worm. Really? What? You're allowed to eat the worm. Now, generally speaking, that doesn't sound like something we're familiar with. Generally speaking, we say you're not allowed to eat the worm, right? Aren't worms prohibited from the Torah? And the Gemara in Makos goes on to say that if you eat bugs or any of these little creatures that are contained in the fruits and vegetables, so you're subject to 3, 4, sometimes 5 sets of lashes. So what are we talking about over here? That they're mutter? And then I'm going to read on the Rashbam and hopefully clarify this point. Sinanam b'mesanenis. Once I strain them, meaning I separate the worm from the from where it grew, asur, so then they become asur. They came into parchment. Malcolm Revi say, "Havalei kasher tsasheretz ala aretz kedam Rabbi Shili elu treifos v'ikar." Well, first of all, the Rashbam says this to me is the correct pshat. Says the Rashbam that the kappa that we're talking about is the bug, and it's not talking about the poison inside the lettuce. But either way, in other words, but the Rashbam quoted the first pshat. Obviously, he didn't reject it, but he feels that this is the better pshat. But anyway, the Rashbam says, you got to remember what we learned back in Chulin, back in Elu Treifus, third parak of Chulin, end of the third parak of Chulin, where the Gemara there discusses that if I have a worm or a bug growing inside the fruit, so that, the Gemara says, is not prohibited. In other words, the Torah prohibits shrutzim, but hasharetz hasharetz al haaretz, meaning it has to be on the land. Once it makes contact with the land, so then then and only then does it become aser. But as long as it grows inside the fruit or inside the vegetable, so then it's not going to be aser. If I remember correctly, I'm going on memory, but the Gemara over there has the various discussions and questions about when exactly is it considered al ha'aretz, right? I think the question the Gemara asked over there is, what if it's on the peel of the fruit? Is that considered al ha'aretz? Anyway, you bite into an apple and you see half a worm, so, I mean, you could be disgusted, but don't feel so bad. It may be that that's fine. So anyway, but the point over here is that we have the kappa, we have these indigenous worms that grow inside the chasa, and what I do is I dip into the charosis in order to kill them. It's interesting, by the way, to kill them, meaning not to eliminate them, just simply to kill them. I'm not sure. Here is where I get a little bit murky in terms of my understanding. Meaning what? When they're alive, that's a problem, and once they're dead, okay, now it's okay? Meaning, is that the issue? I'm not 100% sure in terms of what is the exact point of dipping it into the charosis. We want them killed? Maybe that's... I'm not sure. But anyway...
Why do it then if you're not taking it out?
Yeah, correct. I mean, are we right? Are we not debugging? It doesn't sound like from the Rashbam we're debugging. It just sounds like we're just killing it. Anyway... No, I mean, they have feelings, but we're talking about little bugs. Okay, anyway, but the point is that, let's go back to the Gemara's original point. I know we're so many points away from the Gemara's original point, but the Gemara's original point is, it's clear I dip the mar in the charoses, because otherwise, why would I be washing my hands? Back to the Gemara. Halo Naga. V'dilma, 3 lines down from the top of the Amud. La'olam eim l'chalot tzarech l'shakuye. V'kapa me'reich mayis. The Gemara says, maybe you're wrong. Maybe we're just simply hovering the charoses, I'm sorry, the chazeres, the maror over the charoses, and maybe because of the aroma that's being produced from the charoses, so maybe the bugs will die just simply by hovering over. Maybe you don't have to dip it in. So the Gemara says, okay, if you're right, so then back to square one, why are you washing your hands? I mean, you're not touching the liquid. So why then would you have to wash your hands? And again, we're not going to be washing our hands just over a fruit or a vegetable. So Dima Meshach Olei, so the Gemara says, well, maybe you'll dip it. Meaning, it's hovering over and may fall and it may come into contact with the liquid. So on the possibility that my hands will touch the liquid, so therefore I have to wash. But it is not clear conclusive proof that I'm actually dipping it into the charosis. So basically, it's clear from our Gemara over here that they did not absolutely know whether or not there was a mitzvah to dip in the charosis, meaning there needs to be charosis there. And we'll talk about the level of that need, meaning is that just simply a minug? Is that a mitzvah? We'll talk about that later this morning. It's just not absolutely clear whether or not I have to dip. What our minug is, I mean, I speak on behalf of me, but our minug is that we dip. The Mishnah Berurah is very clear that right, what I did as a kid is not correct, and that is I piled on the charoses onto the maror, and I ate it. That's clearly incorrect. In fact, you'll see from today's daf that you have to taste the maror, and any attempt to mask the taste of the maror is simply incorrect. So it's just, in other words, even when we dip the charoses, that means that we dip into the charoses. We'll get to that. We will get that. Actually, is coming up later today. That your very question. Amar of Papa, lo nishi inish mar becharoses dema agav chalya de tavla maftile lemarure. So I'm sorry. The point that I just made, the Gemara is going to make it, and that is, don't let it sit in the charoses. Meaning you're going to dip in the charoses, fine. But don't let it sit in the charoses, because the charoses is very sweet. We'll talk about, later this morning, we'll swap recipes in terms of how to make your charoses. And I mean, the Gemara is going to do that. And the Rishonim are going to do that. But what happens is, if you leave your mar in the charoses, it's going to get sweet, and you don't want that. Meaning you want the bitter taste of the charoses, of the chazeres, of the maru. Ubi'inan tam mar veleka. So therefore, a papa says, make sure it's a quick dip into the charoses, and because you want to taste that bitterness. Adabir Rav Chista la Rabbana Ukva v'darash. Rav Chista was leading Rabbana Ukva and expounded the following: Nato yado b'tibo rishon, nato yado b'tibo sheni. Wash your hands twice, once the beginning of the Seder, once at the end of the Seder. Not the end, but you know what I mean. Meaning, wash once before Karpas, and then wash again for Hamotzi, Netilas Yadayim for Hamotzi. So Amru Rabbanan Kamei D'Rav Papa Haba Ama Itmar. Now, he didn't make that statement regarding Pesach. He said it generally. Meaning, I don't understand. At the Seder night, we know the schedule for tonight, right? Before we start the Seder, everyone sings a song together. We know what's coming up tonight, and we know that later in tonight we're gonna wash our hands. We're gonna have motzi. So I can't imagine that you're gonna wash your hands in the beginning of the meal, and then have to wash your hands again at later in the meal. That's crazy. I mean, that's crazy. That's what we do. But I'm saying, but they're just arguing the side of the Gemara, which is that's crazy. Why do I have to wash my hands a second time? I mean, the whole purpose of you washing your hands is to make sure that your hands are no longer tummy, to remove the tumma from your hands. Once you wash it the first time, you're good. So now I need to wash it a second time later that evening? Good. So that's so when he made the statement that I have to wash twice, that's talking about general. Meaning on another night of the year where I wasn't expecting to eat another portion of the meal or to eat bread, then I have to wash twice. But on the Seder night, you really need to wash twice? So Amalu Rav Papa, Adar Abba Hachit, Mars Rav Papa argues, well, this is now where we're in more comfortable territory. This is what we know. The Seder we wash twice. The Yisak Adach Abba Amma Itmar Lamali Trei Tibule. Meaning, why in general do you have to wash twice? Well, what's happening in general? No, the Seder, I know why we have to wash twice. I'm going to explain to you. Elamai Hacha Itmar Nitilas Adam Trei Zimna Lamali. Hamashli Adach Ad Zimna. So the Gemara just re-asks the question. Well, why, if you know you're going to be eating bread later that evening, why do you have to wash a second time? Army Kevin to buy lemeimer. I got it to vahaleila till masuche aschal adaita vanaga. So the Gemara says, I'll tell you why. Because we know that there's a long break between Karpas and the meal. Don't tell the kids this, but after having the vegetable, so we're going to be sitting around for a while. We're not going to be having a meal for a while. So therefore, because of that long lag, or the Gemara says where we're going to be saying Haggadah, Magid, and we're going to be saying Hallel, part of Hallel. So by the time we get to the meal, it's possible that we had an Negia. We made contact with an area that's going to re-tumme our hands. And so that's why we're going to need to do a second washing later that evening. Okay, Adkan, that's the Gemara's discussion about hand washing. So again, the Gemara's conclusion is that, and we know this conclusion we all knew, is that we wash our hands once in the beginning of the meal, that we do four karpas, but now we could say it well. We could sound a little more informed. We're not washing our hands for the vegetable. We're washing our hands because we need to dip it into a liquid. It's the liquid that's necessitating a hand washing. Because when the liquid comes into contact with our hand, the liquid becomes a rishon, the vegetable becomes a sheni. It's the liquid that necessitates the hand washing. And then we wash our hands a second time later that evening because we're going to have motzi. Why wash twice? The Gemara says because magid probably is a hesach. Hesach hadas. This tumah that we're talking about is strictly a tumah derabanan that lies on the hands, that lies on everyone's hands, and the way that it's removed is through netilas yadayim, through washing of the hands. This is not a tumah daraisa. No, but in other words, that's what I pointed out. I muttered under my breath earlier that the washing for bread is not—it's not the same. It's because of the tumah, but in other words, it's not for the same exact purposes. We wash for bread because now let me just say it as a sentence. We wash for bread because the bread itself does not become tummy when we touch bread. Our hands are sheni. The bread is chulin, but the kohanim when they eat their truma, so they need to wash their hands because truma has a higher degree of holiness. Therefore, it's more susceptible to tumah. Therefore, truma can become tummy when sheni hands are touching the truma. What the Chachamim basically instituted is that just so that everyone gets into the habit, we're all going to wash our hands before we eat bread, both Kohanim and non-Kohanim alike. So, in other words, to put it simply, we have to wash our hands before we eat bread. But if our hands are already clean, cleansed from Tumah, so then there would be no need, which is what the Gemara was arguing. We washed our hands for Karpas. Our hands now are tummy free. So why wash again? Answer is, Haggadah is going to be Esachadas. Amarava. Bala matzah yatza, bala marer lo yatza. What if I swallow matzah? Meaning, without chewing. It sounds like a choking hazard. Okay, not recommended. But the Gemara over here is just simply testing the limits of halacha. What if I swallow matzah without chewing it? You fulfilled your obligation. Now, bala marer lo yatza. Now, if you swallow marer, you have not fulfilled your obligation. Bala matzah mar yidei matzah yatza yidei mar lo yatza. And then the Gemara makes a point, which seems to be a little superfluous, and that is, what if I swallow both together? So you fulfilled your obligation of matzah, but you have not fulfilled your obligation of marer. Karchan b'siv uvalan, what if I wrap it up in siv? Siv is something that's inedible, like the leaf of a tree. So af yidei matzah na melo yatza, there you aren't yotze anything. Meaning that's not considered eating, and you have not done an achila of matzah. Now it is a little bit strange because if you go back one amud, not more than one amud, meaning just go back to yesterday's daf. Do you remember yesterday we had the discussion where if I take matzah and I mar and I put it together, so what happens? The taste of the marer is going to be mevatel. It will nullify the taste of the matzah, and as a result of that, you have not. It's not considered like you ate matzah, because taste of matzah has been negated. And meanwhile, our Gemara over here says that, oddly enough, if I eat matzah without chewing on it, and even though I'm not experiencing the taste of the matzah, nevertheless, I fulfill my obligation. So that's very strange, and it's difficult, and the Rishonim are bothered by that, and the Rishonim attempt to address it. And you're ahead of where the question lies. The question lies at the first part, which is that if I take matzah and mar and I put them together without a sieve, so what have I done? I fulfilled my obligation of matzah. And on the Amud Aleph, we said that the taste of mar is going to be mavato, the taste of matzah. Okay, I mean, again, it's answerable. Just I'm raising sensitivity to the question. The question basically begs itself. Okay. So, Amar Rav Shimi Bar Ashi, matzah lefnei kol echad ve'echad. Next point. Everyone should have matzah in front of them. Maror lefnei kol echad ve'echad. Everyone should have maror in front of them. Charosis lefnei kol echad ve'echad. And everyone should have charosis in front of everybody. Ve'ein okrin es ha'shochan el lefnei misha omer hagada. But in terms of akir es ha'shochan, the removal of the table, only in front of head of household, the one who is stating the Haggadah. Okay. That is the opinion of Rav Shimi Bar Ashi. Rav Huna Omer, Kulo Nam Lifnei Misha Amar Haggadah. No, everything goes in front of the person who states the Haggadah, Vehilchzaka Rav Huna, and that's in fact the halacha. Like Rav Huna, okay, and again, as we all know, so where's the matzah? In front of the one who's saying the Haggadah. Where's the marer? Where's the charosis? Where's everything? In front of the person saying the Haggadah. Lama Okrin Es HaShochan. I know I'm going through these points very quickly, but we're behind in. I want to try to catch up today. Lama Okrinus HaShulchan. Why do we do Akiras HaShulchan? So that the children will recognize and they'll ask. Now, the Rashman points out, and we've made this point already a number of times. They, right, the desk center in front of you right now, that was their table. That was their dining room table. Everybody had their own little desk. Everyone had like a mini dining room table right in front of them. And all the food was in front of you. So what would happen was, is that after you made Kiddush and after you had your karpas, so then what would happen was, is they would pick up the table and they would walk out with the table. And why would you do that? That's the Gemara's question. Why would you do that? So the Gemara says, Kadeshi Yakiru Tinokas Vishalu, so that the children are asking, why are you doing that? Meaning, we want questions. We just want the kids to start asking questions. So this would be a great cause for questioning. The Rashman points out that for us, all this becomes almost impossible because we have a dining room table. We have this thing where we all eat at one single table, right? And what are we supposed to do? Pick up the table? So maybe the answer could be yes. The Rashbam says no. What we do, the Rashbam's description now of what's done circa 800 years ago, is that we just simply pick up the Seder plate. And if you want to take a look at the Rashbam inside, he actually writes, then we move it to the other side of the table. We don't even remove it from the room. But basically, it's our attempt to mimic what the Gemara describes over here of Akiras HaShulchan, picking up the table. I find in my house it's pretty much a non-event. I pick up the Seder plate, I put it down, nobody noticed. You know, I have to call attention to it. You know, sometimes it works, most of the time it doesn't. Okay, anyway, the Rashman says that's our attempt to fulfill the Gemara's ruling of Akiras HaShulchan. Amri Debei Rav Yanai. Kidesh Akir Tinokas Vishalo, I just read that, I apologize. We go on. Abai have a Yasa Kamid Rabbah. Abai was sitting in front of Rabbah. Abai was a student of Rabbah. The Gemara tells us a number of times. I can think of Bracha, 7th Perek, where Abai was as a young student under the tutelage of Rabbah. And Chazadakam Madli Taka Mikameh. So, and now what is Rabbah doing? Rabbah picks up the table and starts walking out with the table. Amar lohu, so he says to them, I guess it's Abai talking to everyone else around the table, Adain lo kachinan, asukamai akri takami kaman. Well, what's going on over here? We haven't eaten yet, and people are removing the table. So Amar le Rabbah, so Rabbah says, perfect, that's exactly what I wanted. Now listen to what Rabbah says, because this becomes, it's going to become very significant. Pitarta milama manishtana. We don't even have to say manishtana, meaning we're good. Question was asked, let's move on. So they went now directly to Magid without the Manishtana. That's a simple pshat in the Gemara, what I just said, and that's the Rashbam's pshat in the Gemara. If you take a look at the last Rashbam on the Amud, he writes, "Detani will enter the brayso l'kamen chacham beno shalavi imlav shol who leatzmo manishtana the kaven sheshalulana manishtana." Meaning, the manishtana just simply is a provocation of the kid. We just want the kid to say, "Hey, what's going on?" That's it. Meaning, granted that there's a formula of what to say, and the kid gets up there and he sits on the chair and he stands on the chair and he says manishtana, and it's like the highlight of the Seder. But the truth of the matter is, says the Rashbam, we just want him to ask something, anything. And therefore, the Rashbam writes, Ein anu tzrichum lomar manishtana, ella hashiv al dvarav, lefish nishtabinim in Mitzrayim anu osim kol advar ma'ela. Good, you asked a question, good, now I'll answer. In other words, for the Rashbam, the most important point of the Seder is a cue. You need a question. Doesn't have to be any particular question, just simply a question. That is the way the Rashbam understands the Gemara, which quite frankly is a simple pshat of our Gemara. Tosis, if you want to take a look at the Bam Tosis on the Amud, he cannot tolerate such a pshat. Meaning we're skipping Manishtana? That's crazy. The Tosis writes, Klamar umi tochach yavulishal b'shar dvarim. Ava b'mashashal lama anu okun ashochan lo yipater mi Manishtana. The Tosfos says, are you really suggesting we're going to skip Manishtana? That can't be. Manishtana. Those are important questions. Those questions need to be asked. Not any question. And what Tosfos, the way Tosfos understands the Gemara, is that because he asked this question of why we're moving the table, that will lead to the Manishtana of why this night is different than all other nights and going through all the differences between this night and all other nights. But Tosfos is of the opinion there's no way that you're skipping Manishtana. So it's an interesting and a very fundamental debate between Tosfos and the Rashbam in terms of whether Manishtana is an integral part of the Seder. Rashbam says it's not integral. It just, we just want questions. We need questions. That's all.
How would Tosfos learn what?
Tosfos is not the simple pshat. I'm with you. Tosfos is not the simple pshat of the Gemara. Agreed. And so the Rashbam says it's not an integral part of the Seder, and Tosfos says no, it is. Okay. Amar Shmuel. Get the classic Gemaras now that discuss matzah in the context of the Seder. Amar Shmuel lechem oni lechem she'onim alav dvarim. We have to respond to the bread. The bread requires a response. That's why the Torah describes it as lechem oni. Now, lechem oni, we're going to go through all the different explanations of what the words mean. But Shmuel's explanation is that it demands a response, which in the context of our Gemara, we understand. Meaning, it's got to be there for Magid. Because once I have the matzah out there, so now it demands. It demands a response. We have to say things over the matzah. Tanya Amihachi, lechem oni, lechem she'onim alav dvarim harbei. The Brisa has the same point. It adds the word harbei. Maybe there's a difference between Shmuel and the Brisa. Maybe. Dava acher lechem oni, aniksiv. Now the word lechem oni, even though in the Torah it's written mal, it's written with a vav, but it's pronounced ani, like a poor person. My anisha darko beprusa, afkan beprusa. So you know how a poor person eats? He doesn't have whole loaves of bread. He's poor. So he has broken loaves of bread. Therefore, what do we do with the Seder? We break the matzah in order to replicate the state of poverty, because at this night we're both slaves and we're freemen, and we're moving from being slaves to freemen. So just like a slave has poor and broken bread, so too we're going to have broken bread as well, which of course yields two important discussions. I mean, more than two, but two important discussions which I'll touch on. Number one, when do I break? At what point in the Seder do I actually break? So again, so for all of us who's been at a Seder once or twice or maybe more times in our lives, so we know. In other words, the section of the Seder called Yachatz, and that's when we break it. Yachatz takes place right before Magid. So we have the section called Yachatz. Look at the Rambam's Haggadah. The Rambam doesn't have Yachatz in his Haggadah. So when exactly did the Rambam break the matzah? So unclear. It certainly sounds like from here that that it has to be broken before. Maybe the Rambam went into the Seder with broken matzah. Unclear, but the Rambam does not have Yachatz as part of his Seder. So number one is the question of when to break the matzah. Okay, and number two, if I have broken matzah, so how am I fulfilling the mitzvah of Lechem Mishnah? So this is a big discussion. Tosfos over here has a discussion, and it's a part of a very the discussion can be much larger than just the Tosfos over here. But if I have broken matzah, so isn't there a requirement of Lechem Mishnah? Meaning like on every Shabbos and in every Yontif. So, and if I break it, so I don't have two whole loaves. So, Danny suggests, well, maybe bring in three matzahs, okay? And this is now the beginning of the discussion of the third matzah, meaning that perhaps the third matzah over there, a third matzah is brought. You will not see any discussion in the Gemara about a third matzah. None. In other words, the three matzahs is really the entire discussion of the third matzah really revolves around this point, which is that on one hand the matzah needs to be broken, as our Gemara is telling us. On the other hand, we also know that there's a Lechem Mishnah requirement. Now, also another part of the discussion. Again, I'm just raising these points. There's no depth over here, but I apologize. But but another important point of the whole discussion is there even a Lechem Mishnah requirement on Yontif? Okay, did you know that according to a number of Rishonim, the answer to that is no. There is no Lechem Mishnah requirement. Lechem Mishnah requirement is a Shabbos requirement, but not necessarily Yontif requirement. Why would that be? Because there's a major discussion and debate as to whether or not Mun came down on Yontif. We know Mun didn't come down on Shabbos. That we know. On Friday, we have a double portion of Mun. Hence, Lechem Mishnah for Shabbos. Did Mun come down on Yontif? Yes or no? Unclear from the Torah. Debated amongst the Rishonim. Now, if Mun came down on Yontif, that means that there is no Lechem Mishnah requirement for Yontif. It's only a Shabbos halacha. So Tosfos over here also has that discussion. Again, take a look at the first Tosfos on the Amud for that discussion. Tosfos and Bates, I remember, also discuss this. All right. Anyway, that's part of the discussion as well. Okay, so there are two important discussions over here. When we break the matzah, and if we're breaking the matzah, which we are, we're going to break the matzah, so what happens to Lechem Mishnah? So either one solution is we'll take a third matzah, or another solution is we don't take a third matzah. And it works. And maybe there's no lechem mishnah requirement altogether. Yeah. So the, another major point, which again, it's not, you're not going to see in the Gemara, is that these brachas are going on which matzah? On the whole matzah? On the broken matzah?
Yeah.
Okay. Another discussion outside of the Gemara, but an important discussion as well. Okay, and finally, number three. Okay, so in other words, what do we have so far? Lechem oni with a vav, we have to respond to the matzah. We have to talk about the matzah, talk over the matzah. Number two is that I have to break the matzah. Number three is davar acher. We're now on the top of kuf tetzayin amud aleph. Ma darka shalani hu meisik v'ishto ofer, avkanami hu meisik v'ishto ofer. In other words, when poor people, when they bake their bread, so husband and wife do so in a tag team combination. She needs the dough, he heats up the oven, right? Resources are very scarce. They don't have a lot. They have to make sure that there's going to be a quick transition from the kneading to the going into the oven. So therefore, they need to do that tag team combination. So same thing over here. In other words, when we bake our matzah, so there has to be also this tag team combination. Okay, now the Tanakam of our Mishnah says that charoses is not a mitzvah. Okay, so then why bring it? Why do it? So Amrabi Ami Mishim Kappa. So we kind of knew the answer already. The Gemara alluded to the answer already earlier in the discussion. Because of Kappa, so let's say like the second Pshat on the Rashbam, there's worms that infest the maror, and therefore they have to be negated, and I negate them through the acidity of the charosa. So Amravasi Kappa de Chasa Chama. How do I deal with the worms of the Chasa? So the Gemara says Chama. Hot water. Kapa de chama. Sorry, no, I'm sorry. Chama here is not hot water. I said it incorrectly. The radish. Okay. Kapa de chama karte. The way to resolve the worm problems of your radishes, meaning radishes have their own worm problem. So karte. So that is done through leeks. And kapa de karte chamime. And the way to get rid of the worms of the leeks is through hot water. And the truth of the matter is hot water is really the solution for everything. Meaning all your worm infestation issues can be resolved with hot water. And not only that, but the Gemara provides for us, please don't ask me, but I'll say it, but just don't ask me. And the Gemara provides for us a little song that you sing as you pour the hot water over these vegetables to take care of the worm infestation. And the song goes something like this. Kappa, kappa, dechinerlach, ulosheb benesech lo tamne kalasech. O kappa, I remember you and your seven sons and your eight daughter-in-laws. Okay. I'm sorry, seven daughters and eight daughter-in-laws. Okay, good. Thank you for not asking. Okay, Rabbi Lazar, Rabbi Tzadok, Omer, mitzvah. There is a mitzvah to bring charoses to the table. So right now, we are at the second position, the second opinion in the Mishnah, which is that it's not just a formality to bring charoses to the table, it's a mitzvah to do so. It's a pragmatic, we have to take care of the worms in the maror, but rather there is something symbolic, right, in the charosis. And what is that, my mitzvah? So Rabbi Levi Amar Zech LaTapuach, Rabbi Yochanan Amar Zech LaTit. So the Gemara gives two explanations. One is because of the apple, and the other one is because of the mortar. The mortar, I think we're all more familiar with, meaning what's the story with the mortar? That's how we made the bricks in Mitzrayim. In other words, it's part of a way of us remembering the Shibud. So we'll have paste mortar at the table to help us, give us more experiential input in terms of remembering the Shibud. What tapuach, apple, what's going on over there? So the Rashbam quotes the Medrash, where the Medrash says that we gave birth to our children under the apple tree. And part of the nace is that we gave birth without pain. And so there was no screaming, and didn't cause extra attention. So that is also another memory that it conjures up. So Amar Abai Hilchach Tzarich LeKa'u Tzarich LeSamuche. The Gemara says, based on these two positions, it now will dictate recipe. How exactly do we make our charosis? And now we get to swap recipes. Well, before we swap recipes, so the Gemara says it has to be both. It has to be kuhuye. Kuhuye is pungent, sharp, a little bit acidic, meaning it's got to have that apple flavor to it. Right? Not. By the way, not like the sweet apples that you and I are used to. But in other words, they were back then, in the good old days, their apples were really tart. So it's got to be like, it's got to have that nice kick to it. And also, tzarchlis smuche. And also, it's got to be thick, because it's also got to remind us of the mortar. Lekui zech letapuch vitzarech lesamuche zech letit. Okay, so it's got to have both of these qualities to it as a result of the two memories that it conjures up. Tanya, kavasi de Rav Yochanan, the Gemara quotes a brisa that supports Rav Yochanan, tavlin zech letevin, I throw tavlin and I throw the spices in, it reminds us of the straw. In Mitzrayim and charosa zech letit, and the charosa said, the paste that it produces reminds us of the mortar. I'm Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Tzadok, kachay omrim, tagre charach shi Yerushalayim. Your markets in Yerushalayim. So they would scream as follows: Bo v'tulu lechem tavlin lemitzvah. That was their cry, their bark to the community at large, right? In other words, Pesach, you need your tavlin, and you need it for the purposes of a mitzvah. Okay, in terms of its consistency, you could take a look at Tosos. Tosos has a discussion in terms of whether it needs to be more. In terms of what kind of viscosity we're talking about, thick or a little bit more liquidy. Some have the minhag, says Tosfos, where they would actually make it really thick at the beginning of the Seder, and then by the time it came for dipping, they would pour wine right there and then, and at that point in time, make it more of a liquidy type of a constitution. Okay. Mazgulo kosheni, the kana ben shoel. Okay, now we're up to the second cup. Okay, second cup of wine now comes in anticipation of Magid. Okay, what we have over here is now, right, Kuf Yudalid, right, 2 days ago. So there we talked about the first cup. That first cup was for Kiddush. The second cup of wine now comes in anticipation of Magid. So Mazgul Kosheni V'kan HaBen Shoel, HaBen Shoel Aviv. And here the son asks the father. Now, according to the Rashbam that we did earlier this morning, what question does the son ask the father? Any question. It doesn't matter. Meaning, just simply a question, any question. Meaning, and the question could simply be, second cup of wine. What are you doing? Meaning, what happens on a regular Shabbos and Yantav? Kiddush, and then meal. Okay, so, I mean, it could really be that simple. In fact, the Rashbam over here writes exactly that. So you can take a look at the Rashbam right on this, right on the Mishnah. Kan b'mezigas kosheni ha ben shalos aviv im hu chacham manishana achshav shemozgin kosheni kodem achila. Well, why are you pouring a second cup of wine? And again, this Rashbam over here is consistent with the Rashbam we saw earlier this morning, which is that the manishtana is not an integral part of the Seder night. The manishtana is just simply that if we don't have any questions, the kid has no questions to ask, right? I'm a teacher by profession, right? It happens, right? Any questions? No. Right? Nothing. No response. Okay? So in other words, we need a question. I mean, the Seder requires a question. And so does teaching. But anyway, you need a question. So because you need a question, so if the kid is inspired enough and smart enough where he's able to ask a question, the Rashbam says, great. And if not, so then fill in the blank. Okay, and remember, Tosfos earlier said this morning, Tosfos disagreed. Tosfos says no. The Manishtana is an integral part of the Seder night. So, Hakana ben Shoel, Aviv, im ein das beben, Aviv melamdo. And if the son is not smart, meaning he does not have enough cognitive ability where he's able to ask, so then, here's what dad's going to teach him. The simple pshat really does fall at the Rashbam. Manishtana alay lazem, mikol alosh, b'chol alosh, ane ochim chamek, so matzah, alay lazem, kula matzah. You know, other nights of the year, we have chametz, we have matzah. Tonight's only matzah. Shabbichol alas ano ochlim shayir kos alayla zem marur. You know, on all other nights we have all other vegetables, and tonight's right we're bent on eating bitter vegetables. Shabbichol alas ano ochlim basr tzli shalukim uvasha alayla zem kulot tzli. You know, tonight we're only going to be eating roasted meat. Now, by the way, again, it certainly sounds like the Rashba, meaning the kid's asking questions about things that he doesn't even know yet are happening in the Seder. Okay, so again, it sounds like the Rashba, meaning that this is just instructional questions from the father to the son. Remember what we said earlier in the Masechta, that this question tonight's only roasted meat. It's going like Ben Tema. Ben Tema says all meats tonight are going to be roasted. Even the Chagiga Yedalit is going to be roasted. And finally, question number four, Shebechol Alelos. Okay, now what the correct gears is over here, you see a whole bunch of parentheses in the Mishnah. The Gemara is going to itself try to clarify what the correct girsa of this fourth question is. I'm so confused with how I should be reading the Mishnah. Anu chayavim l'tabal afilo pamachas halayla hazeh shtei pamim. Okay, wait till the Gemara is going to clarify what that fourth question is. Ulfi da'ato shaben aviv melamdo. Now, questions were asked, so now teach, instruct, tell him what happened. As to his understanding, right, commensurate to what he's able to follow. Here's a mission statement for tonight. We begin with Gnus. We begin at the low point, and we end Shevach, and we end with praise. V'doresh, and you explain, and you expound four psukim in the Torah. Arami Ovid Avi Ad Sheigmar Kula Parsha Kula. So open up the Chumash to Parshas Kisavo. Open up to the Arami Ovid Avi. This is a declaration that's made by someone who brings Bikurim to the Beis HaMikdash. So what you're going to do is you're going to teach him those psukim, which are four psukim, which give a synopsis of the entire exile redemption story. It gives it to us in short form. Four psukim, and dorish, and expound those psukim, meaning read the medrash on those psukim, which is what we do at the Seder night. Ashik mar kol parsha kulo. Good. Tanu rabbanu chacham beno sholov imenu chacham ishto sholaso. Here the Brisa gives a little more detail in terms of who's asking. So first, try to get the son to ask. Okay, he's not interested. Then get your wife to ask. Okay, she's not interested. V'imlav hu shol la'atzmo. So then ask yourself. Okay, ask yourself. Yes, meaning, again, the need for a question at the Seder table. And even if, let's say, right, you know the answer, right? Everyone here is a Talmud Chacham. So, here, I have a question. Okay, I know the answer. Okay, I have a question. I know the answer. Okay, doesn't sound like a very... yeah, doesn't sound like the kind of Seder I'd like to be at, but, okay, everyone knows the answers. Okay, but still, Q&A. There has to be a question, there has to be answer. It's a given. Meaning, I agreed. But over here, I don't think it's a pshat in the Gemara. Yes,
Manishtana doesn't necessarily go to question. It could be a declaration that you're making.
Agreed. According to the Rashba, by the way, that could very well be. Right. Here the Gemara just simply clarifies what that fourth question is, because from the language of the Mishnah, it's not all that clear. Meaning it sounds like the way the Gemara is presenting, the Mishnah is presenting the question, that on all other nights we dip once. Really? We have to dip on any other given night? On all the nights we're not obligated to dip once, then tonight we're obligated to dip twice. So Maskel v'Rav Safra chiyuv l'dartiki. Tonight we're obligated to dip twice. The first dipping that we do is not an obligation, meaning I know we do it and we're supposed to do it, but don't call an obligation. We just do it to be so that we're a little bit strange, so we're a little weird. Here, kids, watch. I'm dipping vegetables now. You want to call that an obligation? That's a chiyuv. That's like eating matzah. Eating matzah is a mitzvah. Dipping just to get your kids to ask a question. Don't call that an obligation. So, Alam Rav Safra Hachi Ketani. Ein anu matbil mafilu pamachas halayla hazeh shtei pa'amim. Okay, finally the Gemara sits on a nusach that's comfortable with. On all the nights we don't dip at all, and tonight we're dipping twice. But don't say the word obligation. Okay, just quickly get to the Mishnah. This is not a part of the Gemara that we should go through quickly, but let's just quickly get to the Mishnah. Matcha beginus and Messiah b'shvach, my beginus. Where do we start? What point historically do we start the Seder? Rav Amar Mitchila Ovde Avodas Gilulim Hayu Avosenu. Start about how we were idolaters, right? Parshas Hashavua, right? Lech Lecha Vayera, right? Talk about Terach. Ushmul Amar Avadim Hayinu. No, talk about our slavery. Amle Rav Nachman Ledaru Avde. Rav Nachman says to Daru, his slave, second most famous slave in all of Shas. Number one, I would put Tevi. But Daru comes in, I think, a good second. So Avda Damapik Le Mar Lecheres V'Yav Le Kaspa V'Dava Mai V'Ale Memarle. Look, you're an Eved, so you can answer genuinely to this question. Let's imagine that you're freed, and let's imagine you're given with silver and gold. So what are you supposed to say? Amarle Baila Aduye Ulishabuche. Oh, I would say thank you. So Amarle Pitartam La Manishtana. So Rav Nachman's response is good. Let's skip Manishtana. Second time this morning, now we're skipping Manishtana. Again, it sounds like the Rashbam. Patach va'amar avadim hayino, and then they just go right into avadim hayino. Okay. So basically two different starting points from where the Seder actually, from where the Matzchil and Beginus is. What do we do at our Seder?
Both.
That's the correct answer. We do both. Right, next time you're at the Seder. So think to yourself, I know, so it's more than 6 months away. But next time at the Seder, think to yourself, which one, who's right? So we do both. We say Avadim Hayinu and we say Mitzchila Hayu Avde Avodah Zarah. So, and obviously much more to discuss on these points, but not now. Tomorrow we'll start rubbing Gamaliel.